The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
A new conference, a new standard.
If you are Oregon, who do you want? Ohio State, Indiana, or Penn State? We went through, there's only one scenario where Penn State gets in.
This is a Big Ten Championship Week edition of Danny and Dusty.
Brought to you by Mods PDX. The future of building is here. Online at modspdx.com.
Holden comes in from the left, sets up, turn. It's going to be a pass. Gabriel could run. He runs. He scores! Touchdown, Oregon!
Big Ten Championship Week with Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080 The Fan.
What is up, sports fans? Happy Friday. No Danny, no Dusty. Stoked, though, to be here filling in with Will Ortner again on 1080 The Fan. And Merry Christmas to everybody as well. I'm that guy. I started saying it right after Thanksgiving. Dusty kind of, he was a little taken aback when I called him last week for the Ducks postgame scoreboard show, but I was convincing, and he was like, you know what? I like that argument, Schultzy. But welcome on in. Merry Christmas to everybody. Good to be in on a Friday.
Do you for sure wait until December 1st?
Like, you actually
wait until December 1st for Christmas? Because
no.
I have talked about this. I'm in a war right now with China.
You personally?
Yes. She's my sister-in-law. That's her name.
I was going to say, China.
Yes, China. She is my wonderful sister-in-law, who is, now that she is a part of the family, she's making a purpose pitch. She is trying to take over the family. And I brought this up before.
Yeah.
On November 1st, there was a text sent into the family group chat that it was now Christmas, and there would be a break on the Thursday of Thanksgiving, and then it was back to Christmas. So I have to make sure, because I like Christmas. I enjoy spending time with my family. I enjoy that part of it.
Okay.
I hate the oversaturation of Christmas. Like, the minute that it's November, all of a sudden it's Christmas all the time.
You wouldn't want to come over to my house,
it
then,
gets
buddy.
To the point. Like, are you playing Christmas music in November?
Yeah, November 2nd. I didn't play it November 1st because we had a Halloween party the day after Halloween. By the way, that's Will Ortner, Jeff Rust here as well. Good to sit in with you. Thank you, Jeff, for doing all the heavy lifting and allowing Mr. Ortner and I to come in with you. But yeah, I am the creepy, like, as soon as midnight hits on November 2nd this year, I started playing Christmas music. And I think the first song that I listened to was good old, like, Perry Como. So,
Perry.
Oh, there
Como.
We go. Good old, yeah. Well, yeah.
Is that the name of the song?
No, that's the artist.
Singer.
My bad.
Oh, yeah. See, like, to me, it's all Michael Bublé. Oh,
of course.
And then Mariah Carey gets one, and Wham has their song.
Wham's got theirs.
Bublé just hit a billion plays on Spotify. So
there's the old, and also, Do They Know It's Christmas? You know?
Oh, yeah, the African, like, feed the world,
yeah, exactly.
Let them know it's Christmas
time. You got your Run DMC and a little Christmas in Hollis.
Run DMC has a Christmas song?
Yes. Oh, it's fantastic.
Haven't you ever seen Die Hard?
No.
Well, A, you need to watch that beautiful, it is a Christmas movie, and I will never, ever stray off of that point. In fact, my wife, we watched it recently, and she pointed out about every 2 to 5 minutes, there was a Christmas mention in that movie, and that song
is
in that
song
movie.
In the movie?
Huh. Well, it's not just in that movie, it was played in that movie, and Bruce Willis is like, don't you get any Christmas music? And the limo driver said, this is Christmas music.
Oh, well, look, man, it's on the list. I said it earlier on this show, one of the times I was filling in. During football season, all I listen to, all I watch is football. Then once football's done, that's when, like, TV shows start coming back in. That's when movies start coming back in. Like, Gladiator 2 drops at the perfect time.
Yeah.
I'm jacked up to see it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to see it till next weekend.
Wait, so did you really just say you've not seen Die Hard? Is that what I heard you say? Or Will, am I taking crazy pills?
No, I haven't seen Die Hard. Oh, I've seen parts.
And, you're missing it.
And it's like on TNT. It doesn't count. I know. I understand it. He's like crawling through the duct. I understand
that's
that
one part of like a 2-hour movie.
That's the part that I've seen.
You know, one of the things that I've always loved, though, one of the little trivial tidbits of that movie is that the end of it, not to ruin it for you, even though it's, you know, a 35-year-old
movie. You can spoil
it. Now.
I'll still watch it. Yeah.
When Hans Gruber falls off the building.
Oh, yes.
Alan Rickman apparently deathly afraid of heights.
Yes.
Deathly afraid of heights. And so they told him in that scene, they said, okay, well, we're going to drop you on the count of three.
Mm-hmm.
And they get to one, two, and drop him. And so that look on his face is
pure terror.
Absolute sheer terror.
Genuine
that was
fear.
Not acting.
That's fantastic. As a person who is also afraid of heights, I get the irony. There's nothing more terrifying than being within like 30 feet of a ledge. Like, I can't sit...
I don't like walking over overpasses.
I can't sit on the edge of the second deck at, like, Moda Center. Like, I couldn't do that. I couldn't be at a Mariners game and be, like, right on the railing. Like, I gotta buy first-level tickets. There's no Ferris wheel. Like, I remember one time I was forced to ride on that stupid death trap of a Ferris wheel in Seattle. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it has candy canes on it right now. I was just there.
Does it have candy canes?
It does.
Okay, those are candy canes of death. Because you're over the water, and so there's a part of you in your brain where you're like, if I fall, at least I fall in the water, but then you remember that the water is basically concrete, and it shakes the whole time. There's no point of it where you're like, I'm in a stable place. You're constantly shaking and hoping not to die. And I went on it because I was like, it won't be that bad. Like, I'm afraid of heights, but like, I'm locked in this thing. And then I realized you can see through the bottom. It's all glass. Don't do that. I'm sweating right now talking about it. I hate that stupid thing. I can't believe I got tricked into doing it.
It's just a little freaky.
Just another reason to not go to Seattle.
Well, I love Seattle.
Well, Pike's Place was fine.
Yeah, my Mariners, Pike's, yeah.
I enjoyed that.
A lot of good restaurants.
I enjoyed the Seahawks game.
I hate driving around there. That is a horrible city for driving.
Well, that's why.
That's true.
Yeah, that's why you park at your hotel and you Uber. Because
All cities are bad, though. Like, is there a good city to drive in? Like, Portland, I feel like, is on the better end of it, and I hate driving in Portland.
Well, because, like, it feels like even here, the city center, you know, rough area doesn't seem as big as trying to drive around in what Seattle's city center would be.
True. Well,
does that make sense?
It's sneaky hilly, too.
Yeah.
Like,
you don't
realize how many hills are all around that place. It's not fun. And we were over there during the ice storm. Like, that also could have been part of it. Like, there was ice everywhere on the stupid Ferris wheel. I did not enjoy it. The amount of times that I fell on my butt... not cool.
I'm sorry I'm laughing, but
no, and it was so much worse.
I'd like
to
see that.
Yeah, me
well,
too.
Hold on. Let me make it worse for myself. It was like the first getaway with a girl at the time. So it's trying.
Even
to,
better.
Again, I can go on a Ferris wheel. I'm not afraid of heights. Whole time death grip on the table.
Do you want to hold my hand? No,
nope,
it's shaking.
Nope,
I'm good.
Don't leave me alone. No, I'm not scared.
Man.
You think I'm scared, but I'm not.
It is actually pretty funny.
A lot
funny.
Of gaslighting.
That's true. It is pretty funny when you go to Seattle and you kind of walk up a couple of blocks and you're like, oh, I'm in San Francisco all of a sudden. There are quite a few hills.
Is San Francisco the same?
Well, San Francisco is literally like streets of hills
when
you get into downtown.
Yes.
So. Well, you're not as well-traveled as I thought you were, man. You've played college football
at the
Division II level. You've traveled all through the West Coast, into the far ends of the Pacific Northwest. How the hell do you not know San Francisco's
hilly? Well, no, but here's the thing. There's no D2 teams in San Francisco. I've gone to a lot of these places, but again, it's D2 football.
I know.
So you fly into Kansas City, and then you drive 3 hours to Bolivar.
To the tiny little hole in the ground.
You fly into San Antonio, and then you drive 3 hours into Kingsville. So I've been to a lot of big cities. I just have spent no time in them. I've spent a lot of time in, like, Clovis, New Mexico.
Yeah.
Or Silver City, New Mexico, which, by the way, is higher than Denver.
I've been in
Silver City.
Have
fun trying to play a football game in that.
Do you guys have oxygen or not at the D2 level?
We did the second time we played there. We did not the first time.
That was a mistake.
That was a lesson learned. But, I don't know. I want to travel more. It's on the list of things I want to do.
Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, obviously, speaking of traveling, Dusty is gone because he is traveling, going with the Oregon Ducks to Indianapolis, the Big Ten Championship this weekend. Of course, it's a branded conference championship week here on 1080 The Fan. And, Will, you and I are lucky enough to be here on a Yacht Rock Friday with Jeff Rust. So, I'm cool with the Yacht Rock music, but yeah, like I said, I've been listening to Christmas since November 2nd. I'd be just as happy if it were all Christmas music at this point.
What's your top Christmas song?
That's not everybody, so I get it. Probably The Christmas Song by Mel Torme and Nat King Cole. Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
Go. Mel Torme.
Well, that's who wrote it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the Velvet Frog.
My original introduction to Mel Torme was from, was it Night Court?
Yes, I believe he did a starring or a guest starring role on Night Court.
Yeah, well, he was a frequent topic of conversation too from old Judge Harry Stone.
What's your top go-to?
Yeah, what are you guys' top Christmas songs?
I enjoy some Harry Connick Jr. Christmas tunes. Mm. He's got the good old velvety voice. You got your Wham, of course.
Yeah. I haven't been whammed yet. And then, I'm pretty proud of that.
And then I think an underrated one, perhaps it's not underrated, perhaps it's properly rated, but is The Boss. Just the old, Merry Christmas, baby!
Yeah, he's all messing around with his band. Hey, is Santa going to bring you a new saxophone? Yeah.
Gotta love The Boss.
It's not too bad. What about you, Will?
Me? I don't know. I like to go off the beaten path. It's not that I don't like the Bublé, because Bublé can clearly sing, but it becomes...
And I kind of sound like him, so if you don't like Bublé, you don't like me.
It's not that I don't like him, it's that every year I hear the same thing over and over again, and it annoys me,
there's a reason for that.
I know. Like, look, I get that I'm wrong.
No, I don't think that you're wrong.
I've gotten sick of him. I've gotten to the point where I'm tired of listening to Bublé's Christmas songs, because I've heard it over and over and over again. So I really enjoy when like a random crew comes out, but I also want them to do their own thing. Mm. Like, I don't need to hear Darius Rucker singing Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
I do. I love that.
I want Darius Rucker. I like Darius Rucker too, but I want him to create his own song. Yeah.
I just discovered he had like two whole Christmas albums. I am a Hootie and the Blowfish super fan, and it popped up on like my Apple Music, and I'm like, what, Darius Rucker?
I saw them in concert once when I was in college. They opened for Toad the Wet Sprocket. Up in Tacoma.
I'm assuming they're way more famous than that band.
No, I actually know of Toad the Wet.
What the hell? Some local Pacific Northwest music fair here.
Yeah.
You should check out the old Harry Connick Jr. though.
I think that was one from Mom as well. Yeah. Like, I think my mom was playing a lot of his stuff. Like, you can't say that Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You is your favorite song. Like, you instantly get judged. You can't do that. That's like saying your favorite Bon Jovi song is Living on a Prayer. Like, oh, I'm a Bon Jovi super fan. Yeah. I love Living on a Prayer. No, it's like, no, you got to pick a
different
song. Great song. Great song.
Yeah, I'm not as big of a Bon Jovi fan as y'all. but it is interesting to see the origins of Christmas music and how all that stuff hasn't really changed. I actually, maybe 5 or 6 days ago was reading a pretty extensive article just about the story of why Christmas songs are the way that they are. We're still listening to Andy Williams, and it's the most wonderful time of the year. We're literally, as you say, Will, hearing that same song over and over, and it's because a lot of those songs came out of an era when World War II was happening, and all of that togetherness, all of that feeling, you know, that we were having while all this tumultuous crap was going around, you know, the rest of the world, having this sentiment here at home and thinking of, you know, the brothers and the dads that were overseas and the ones that didn't come back. Just a lot of really close feelings to this holiday were built in the 40s to 50s. And since that nostalgia has stuck around since then, there's really no interest for people, apparently, other than you, Will.
I was gonna say, so
for
apparently you're saying that I'm a piece of garbage. I'm a communist and I don't want our country to succeed.
Not a piece of garbage.
That is what I took from that. Look, I'm going to fully lean into this. Adam Sandler's Hanukkah song. That's my favorite.
Absolutely.
One. That's my favorite holiday song.
I was going to say, too, I think perhaps also underappreciated the old Christmas Vacation theme by Mavis Staples.
Oh, yes. If you want to throw that in today, Rust, I am A-okay with that. I think that technically qualifies as Yacht Rock. Yeah. The beginning of that movie is really good. All right. We could keep having fun talking about Christmas movies and Christmas. Wait, what?
I have.
You have seen that movie. I was just like, you haven't seen that one?
I've seen that one.
You're coming over to my house, we're having beers, and you're watching it. Well, I'll invite everyone. everybody.
Did we just become best friends?
I think we did. It happened. All right, guys. Yeah, we could keep talking about Christmas movies and Christmas music and Black Friday shopping, all kinds of stuff from the last couple of weeks. But we do have a busy day of actual sports talk, chocked full of some good topics, so we should probably get to that. Coming up, a future Hall of Famer reportedly interviewing for college football, coaching jobs. We'll get into that. Also, diving into things, all things, Oregon versus Penn State, previewing the Big Ten championship game. We'll get a little check-in with the Portland Trail Blazers, as well as a couple of other fun things planned. But first, Will, is Super Bowl 59 Detroit's to lose? We're going to come back with that answer coming up next. Schulte and Will sitting in for Danny and Dusty today. Rusty doing all the heavy lifting here on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan. Schulte and Will in for Danny and Dusty. Rusty here as well. Starting off with Thursday Night Football. What a freaking barn burner, Will. The Detroit Lions handling the Green Bay Packers in a pivotal NFC North matchup, 34-31 at Ford Field, clinching a playoff berth for the second consecutive season. Actually, the first time they did that since 1995. Detroit going just about 30 years in between times where they made the playoffs back-to-back years. And they did it in one of the gutsiest ways possible, going for it on fourth down to keep Green Bay from getting the ball back to try a game-tying field goal. Here's what Coach Dan Campbell had to say about it after the game.
I just felt like we needed to end it on offense, you know, and I did not want to give that ball back, and I believed we could get that. I believed we could convert, you know, and I trusted that old line. I trusted David, and they came through for us. It's a hell of a call by Ben, you know. It just, I knew how I wanted to play this game. The team knew it, and everything in me told me that let's finish this, and so we did.
Another win for the Fighting Dan Campbells, of course. That marks their 12th win of the year, sitting at 12-1. Yeah, well, tied at 31 last night. It was a great back-and-forth game. It looked like they were starting to get a little tired because, of course, Detroit is pretty banged up on the defensive side of the ball, pretty depleted after losing even a couple of guys during the game, second and third quarter, before they got one of their defensive tackles back. Detroit just acted like a championship-caliber team. They stepped up in the biggest moment of the game, and it was, in my mind, kind of like that moment of the year type where you've seen them win in other ways, but then seeing them win in a barn burner back and forth fourth contest like this, Will, it just shows how clutch the Detroit Lions actually are.
Well, I love that Dan Campbell hasn't wavered. Like, he is a guy who is going to ask the dealer to hit me when he has 19.
Hell yeah.
Like, that is what he's going to do. And if that is your MO, I get the same kind of defensiveness about Dan Lanning. People get upset when Dan Lanning goes for it on fourth down and then he doesn't get it, right? He doesn't get it deep in his zone. In this game, the Lions, they went for it on fourth and one and they didn't get it deep in their zone. And that set Green Bay up for a touchdown drive that gave Green Bay the lead. But that didn't defer, or that didn't make Campbell second guess himself. He just said, that's fine. We didn't get that one. We're going to get the next one and we're going to keep going with our foot on the gas. If you are a conservative coach, be a conservative coach. If you are an aggressive coach, be an aggressive coach. Where you get into problems is when you're like a Brandon Staley, or Sirianni has this issue at times with Philadelphia, where sometimes he's conservative, sometimes he's aggressive. And if you're going to go by the numbers, you need to go by the numbers the entire time. It's the law of big numbers. If, you know, it says go for it on fourth and one, you need to go for it every single time you get to fourth and one. And Campbell does that. This Lions team has done a great job. They have built the offensive line to be their powerhouse. Obviously, everyone talks about Penei Sewell. Penei Sewell, for my money, is the best right tackle in football right now. What he can do in pass protection, what he can do run blocking, and then the fact that they can get him out in space, and at times he's running away from David Montgomery, and he's running stride for stride with Gibbs. There aren't many O-line players ever. There's few O-linemen that can do that, and you have a truly special one. Then you go in and you look at, like, Ragnow at center. That dude is a warrior.
Oh, my God.
The block that I remember is in the playoffs where he falls to his knees and he's still driving the defensive lineman back while he's on his knees. It's one of the more impressive blocks as an O-lineman that I've ever seen. So when you just look at this team, they're aggressive by nature, and they're able to be aggressive by nature because of the offensive line that they have built, where they know we can run the football with Montgomery or we can run it with Gibbs and we're going to be okay. And they play by the numbers, and they trust that if they do it enough times, it's going to work out positively, more likely than not, for them. I love it, man. They had to have this game.
Yeah.
They had to have it. Because when you look at this playoff picture, right now it's between them and the Eagles for home field. It is a much bigger deal for the Lions to have every game in that dome than it is for the Eagles to have home field and for the Lions to have to go and play on the road, not in a dome. Can you imagine them going to Philadelphia late January trying to play that championship game? It's a lot easier at Ford Field than it would be at the Link.
I love Jared Goff. He's been one of the best quarterbacks since 2021 in the NFL. But yeah, going SoCal boy going into a cold, cold playoff type of atmosphere. Yeah, I'm not sure that the Detroit would be feeling very good, or at least as good as they were last night. And Will, you talk about the offensive line. I noticed that first touchdown by David Montgomery. He had like 6 or 7 feet of like a wide hole right into the end zone from about 4 yards out. It looked like Green Bay's defensive line couldn't even challenge it. So yeah, I agree. Their offensive line as a whole, obviously led by Penei Sewell, got to be tops in the league. And that is what allows them to be aggressive. They have that shorthanded defense right now, unfortunately, just from Aiden Hutchinson, you know, all the way through. You've basically been dealing with a lot of losses on the defensive side throughout the season, but, you know, you can, because you have that good, staunch offensive line, lean on your offense a little bit more. Be more aggressive with that offense, and your defense can give up some points like they did last night, and you can still come out on top. If Dan Campbell trusts his offensive line, in which case that last, I know people are pissed about that first fourth call, down call that he didn't get, but that second fourth down call that they got, that took cojones and it took trust in that offensive
line.
Well,
you also have to hope with the defense that they get healthy at the right time. Like, Anzalone is their starting middle linebacker. He broke his arm. He's been out for a little bit. He should be coming back right around playoff time. You might get him for a week or two in the regular season so he can build up. That's going to make a big difference. The play that sticks out in my mind is right now, Quan Alexander, he's the linebacker that they picked up, and he is replacing Anzalone for better or worse terms, right? On one of the big Kraft interceptions, it wasn't his touchdown, but it led to a Josh Jacobs rushing touchdown.
Yeah.
He is supposed to be guarded by Alexander. Alexander is looking in the backfield. He is lost, and it's because he doesn't understand his assignment. Now, some of that is because Alexander is a new player on the team. He's only been there for a couple weeks, so he doesn't have that playbook memorized like the back of his hand like Anzalone would, and Anzalone would know who his guy in coverage was and would stay with him. But also, Anzalone has proven time in and time again that he can do his job to the highest level. Where Quan Alexander, he is a very good backup linebacker, and he has had multiple stops where he's been a starting linebacker and he's been good in those spots. He's just not the same as Anzalone. So once they can get Anzalone back, because I don't think you're going to get Hutchinson back. Like, if you could get Hutchinson back, that's the biggest get for that defense. But your second biggest get is Anzalone. You're going to get him back. And so I do think that this defense will continue to improve. You also have to remember, that's your starting middle linebacker. That's the quarterback of your defense. He's setting everybody in the right spot. He's setting everything up. And so right now you're working with a guy because of the different injuries that you've had at that linebacker position. Because it's not just Anzalone who's gone out. You have a guy who's coming off the street who's doing his best. But it's not the same as having someone who's been in there since August, right? Also,
of course,
I think the Packers have a legit shot to win the NFC. Like, to be able to spot Detroit, 10 points at the end of the first half, you're down 7-17, and come back and fight and legitimately have a shot at winning this game, and you were up at multiple different points, and you didn't lose it because you played badly. You lost it because Detroit played just a little bit better than you. I now think more highly of Green Bay than I did going into this game. I legitimately think if Jordan Love cannot turn the football over, this is a team that it would not surprise me if they were in the NFC Championship game or even in the Super Bowl. Like, if they can run the football the way they have been with Josh Jacobs and they can get a couple things to go their way, why couldn't they be that third or fourth team, like that dark horse team that reaches up and beats a Philadelphia or beats a Detroit in the playoffs?
So to wrap this up, you're basically saying that no, Super Bowl 59 is not yet Detroit's to lose because the Eagles, the Packers, the Vikings, even if they continue to play at the clip they've been playing, and by the way, two of those three teams are in the NFC North, with them, so it's obviously a very hard-fought divisional contest. I mean, and they're all within a couple of games each other with, what, 3 weeks to play now, or 4 weeks technically for the Packers and Vikings. But really, outside of those three teams, do you see anyone else? Let's throw Kansas City out. Like, do you see anybody in the NFC able to compete with them going through the playoffs or no?
In the NFC, I would throw out Minnesota. I don't think that Minnesota has the longevity. Okay. Like, I'm very impressed with what they've done in the regular season. I think they probably win a playoff game. But I think when it comes to, like, do you have the horses? I don't know that they have the horses to compete with Detroit, with Philadelphia. And again, Green Bay, Jordan Love has to limit his turnovers because he's got a little bit of Brett Favre in him. He's closer to Brett Favre than he is to Aaron Rodgers, right? Yeah. He is going to turn the ball over because he's a gunslinger. So you have to get Jordan Love in the right spot. You have to get him in a game like this where he doesn't turn the ball over. Now, you'd like his completion percentage to be a little bit higher. You'd like him to be more like he was in the second half than he was in the first half, where he only had like three completions. But he turns that into a 12 for 20 performance. When I look at the NFL as a whole right now, to me, the team that I think is the favorite is Buffalo. I like the way that Josh Allen is playing, because much of the way that I'm just talking about Jordan Love when it comes to turnover issues, that's Josh Allen, except this year he doesn't have those turnovers. He only has a couple interceptions. He only has a couple fumbles. Now, he had a couple of those fumbles in a big game against Baltimore on a Sunday night, so that's something that may worry me a little bit. But again, you want to talk about getting healthier? They just got their starting middle linebacker, Matt Milano, back, and he had been gone for most of the year. That defense is playing lights out right now. But I think the most important thing about this Buffalo team is they have a counterpunch to Josh Allen. The last couple years, it's been Josh Allen, and he's chucking it up to Davis or he's chucking it up to Diggs, and you're hoping that the other team can't cover them. You run into Kansas City, where they have the secondary to cover those two, and they fall short. This year, you're finally using that big offensive line, and you're trusting Cook to run the football. You're using that 12 personnel formation where you can get Kincaid and you can get Dalton Knox in those formations where, one, they're both really good run blockers from that tight end position.
Yeah.
But more importantly, they're matchup nightmares when you're talking about the passing game. And so you've taken away Josh Allen's turnovers, but you've also given defenses more things to worry about because you truly do have to worry about their run game. So to me, right now, if you told me that Kansas City drops another game or two and the rest of the AFC has to go through Buffalo with Bills Mafia, that's a home field advantage that few can compare to. And it just feels like it might finally be their time. Like, this was supposed to be a reloading year. This was supposed to be the year where they were like that fourth seed. They won the division, but they barely did. And they were closer to 500 than they were to getting, you know, the first round bye. And right now, I just feel like they're a hot team and it's finally kind of their turn.
I like Buffalo. I'm hesitant because I do. Man, I've seen Josh Allen's year so far. It's been great. But I am willing to run through a wall for Dan Campbell. Like, I want to be on the Fighting Dan Campbells at this point. And I do think that they are, at least in my opinion, one of the teams that is not guaranteed a Super Bowl, but has a much better chance than everybody else. Not just really because of their win over Green Bay, but how they've won all season. Beating the Seahawks down, beating the Cowboys down, scoring 50 over the Titans and, you know, and the Jaguars, and then winning in close games as well. It just doesn't matter how they have to do it. The Fighting Dan Campbells can get it done, and I'm rooting for them to get it done. And I truly believe their offense is well poised to be able to be leaned on and go all the way this season. It's Detroit's window right now, excuse me, and they have a head coach that seemingly will do anything to take advantage of it. So let's see if they can clinch that number one seed in the NFC. Just 3 weeks for them remaining in the regular season. But we got to switch gears from one NFL team to a former coach of another. Multiple reports stating that former Patriots coach Bill Belichick is interviewing for a college job. We'll tell you where coming up next, but first, here's Rust with SportsCenter. We've got a whole hour plus of Oregon Ducks Penn State talk, as well as some college football playoff previewing, some conference championship weekend previews coming up as well. But before we get to all that, I had to address this bit of news actually involving somebody that probably really likes this kind of music. I would assume he's got Yacht Rock blasting all around his car, all around his house.
First off, everybody loves Chuck Mangione.
I mean, that is true. But I think of an old man with
he's
his 20...
The man.
I think of an
Gione.
Nice.
Jeez.
We got there.
I think of an old man with his 26-year-old girlfriend being like, hey, this is a good vibe, right? Like riding
24.
Around the car. 24.
Excuse me. How dare you age her?
Oh, I shouldn't
just
have done that.
Cruising around with the top down in the old Mazda Miata.
Well, yeah, she might
she's
have
younger than me.
She might have some competition,
is,
too.
His girlfriend is 3 years younger than me.
That's insane. She has my first name, too. Her name is Jordan. So
spelled
isn't that
the
weird?
Same?
No, it's spelled with an A. That would be really frightening if it were spelled with an O. My mom did that. She's told me to distinguish my name on paper as a boy. I don't know. Anyways, but the man that likes that kind of music, I'm sure, that would be former Patriots coach Bill Belichick. Could you picture him as a college football coach? Well, the University of North Carolina certainly can. They have reportedly interviewed Belichick to be their next head coach after firing Mack Brown in his second stint with the Tar Heels. Belichick, of course, with the Pats for 24 seasons, won 6 Super Bowls with them, 2 Super Bowl winning teams that he was a part of with the New York Giants as a defensive coordinator as well. Obviously, all kinds of accolades for Belichick. Never coached in college, but his dad was a longtime assistant at the U.S. Naval Academy. So it's something that I would assume he's familiar with. Like he's done work around like high schools and stuff like that. But you know, you also heard him in that Patriots documentary insulting Patriots players whenever he got a chance. Like, nah, this kid at this in high school could make that play. So it makes you.
That's a classic. That's just a football coach's thing. Like, when I was at Central, it was always, you couldn't play at Kittitas High School. You couldn't play at Ellensburg. That's a classic college, NFL. That's a football coach's thing. That's whatever you can make fun of a high school that a college player certainly could play at. They're going to make fun of that. So the rumor around this one that's getting kind of thrown out there is that he would take it. And he would bring Steve over with him,
yes,
who's the DC at UW. And then within, you know, 2 or 3 years, Bill would hand it off to Steve.
Kind of a legacy deal, yeah.
Steve would then take it over. That's the rumor of why it would be enticing to Bill. I think it would be a very weird move for a college to move on from one old football coach to go grab an even older football coach. That doesn't really make sense to me.
Yeah, Max also in his early 70s.
Steve also, I mean, he's only been at UW for a year. He's mostly in the NFL ranks. I haven't heard of him being like the greatest recruiter of all time, something that is pretty important. Not saying that he couldn't do it.
You think just, Bill Belichick with NIL money, though, would even have to work hard to recruit?
I think Steve would. If you're,
I think he wouldn't want to work hard to recruit.
Well, I don't think he would have to.
Well, but again, if you're hiring Bill, you're really hiring Steve. You're hiring Bill so that he can teach Steve and give Steve the ropes, and then he can go off into the sunset.
Yeah.
You're not hiring Bill and like, you know what, in 5 years, we might be playing in this 12-team playoff. What UNC, a lot of the college football like experts that I listen to, they talk about UNC being a sleeping giant. Like they have all this money, and it sounds like a lot of the brass at UNC want to become not just a basketball power, they want to become a football power too. Now, there's still going to be more money is going to go to basketball. That is what they're known for. That's what they care about. But they know that if they don't want to get left out of, you know, the next realignment, because that is coming, you have to care about football. See what Indiana has done with Kurt Cignetti.
Yeah.
They threw a bunch of money at him and his staff after he had some success because they know they need to keep building. So it would not shock me if UNC goes out and makes a splashy hire. It also wouldn't shock me if there's a lot of coaches who are either high-name offensive or defensive coordinators, or maybe, you know, like the Tulane coach, Summerall. That might be a spot that Summerall might want to end up at. You're going to have a lot of money, but you're not going to have the same expectations that you might have at, say, an Ohio State or, you know, a more traditional power. Yeah. I think UNC might be a better spot than necessarily like a Nebraska. UNC would have more money, but they're going to have less of the demand to win,
the expectations,
less of boosters who are trying to mess everything up and get the guys that they want playing as you would as like a Nebraska, right? And so you might see a lot of top end coaches trying to get this job. To me, I don't feel like the Belichick move makes sense. If Steve was more proven, if like this last UW recruiting class came in because you just had early signing day and everyone was like, look at the top three recruits. They were all got here because of what Steve did. Then I might be more inclined, hey, let him learn under his dad for another year or two. His dad will kind of help show him the ropes of the coaching side. You bring in an OC who's a nails recruiter, right? Obviously, they wouldn't, you would hope they wouldn't bring in a Will Stein, but a Will Stein type of recruiter.
Yeah.
And he can learn the recruiting side from him. Maybe that makes sense. But to me, right now, when I look at this, I don't see why you hire Bill Belichick. It doesn't make sense to me. From UNC's point.
To look at some of the other names really quickly, of course, you did throw out Tulane's John Summerall. Also, Iowa State's Matt Campbell, Georgia defensive coordinator Glenn Schumann, former Arizona Cardinals head coach and Panthers interim coach in the NFL, Steve Wilks, has been thrown around. They did initially make a big push for former Tar Heel Arthur Smith, who's the coordinator for the Pittsburgh Steelers right now, offensive coordinator, of course, former Falcons head coach. But he turned them down, said he was not a candidate. So Belichick is one of at least 5, 6, or 7 major names here that we're talking about. But as far as the position goes, if I'm an AD, it is most attractive to me to have some sort of legacy plan in place that you're talking about with big names. Because in my opinion, you're not ever going to get, you might have a year or two where you're sniffing the college football playoff, but as the University of North Carolina, it's really not your goal to do anything other than bring the program status up in the world of college football. Bill Belichick, Steve Belichick can do that. Now, you give him 3 years to do that, then he could ride off into the sunset. That seems like a much easier plan to get going than hiring somebody like a Matt Campbell or like a Glenn Schumann, because Belichick is seemingly bending a little bit here. We never thought that he was going to be okay with coaching in college, but apparently, according to CBS's Brett McMurphy, he is done with doing media stuff. This is just a quote from him. It's like he's tired of the Manning cast. So Belichick willing to even have this conversation, I think, shows where he's at, and I think UNC would do well to take advantage of it.
I don't think he's the best fit there.
Like, that's fair.
I really don't. Go get Summerall. Summerall to me seems the best grab for you. You can go get a coach who has proven that he can win in a relatively similar area, right? Tulane's in Louisiana. So relatively the same, East Coast, kind of more on the South, right? And he's done it with less money. You're going to get decent money at North Carolina. You're going to have decent NIL backing. And I would push back on you can't, I don't know that you can build a title team there, but if you would have asked 10 to 15 years ago, would you have said you could build a title team in Eugene? No, probably not.
Fair point.
There was a lot of people, a lot of really smart college football people, that said Chip had gotten Oregon to the peak. That was the best they were going to be. And now all of a sudden, Dan Lanning's turning in number one recruiting classes, or at least top five recruiting classes. He's flipping more 5 stars than ever before. And then when they go out on the field, they continue to improve, right? So if you get the right coach in a situation like North Carolina, I think you can do just fine. Like right now, Matt Campbell, I don't think he's necessarily the best hire for UNC, but he'd be a pretty darn good one. He's one game away right now from getting Iowa State, who before this year had never had a 10-win season, who has not won a conference championship since, I have the number right here, they haven't done it since 19-freaking-12.
Jeez.
They're one game away, and that's what Campbell has done at Iowa State. Imagine what he could do with a little more resources in an area that has a little bit more fertile recruiting ground. So to me, why would you go for Belichick? Because Belichick isn't really going to be your coach. You think that the guy who got ran out of the NFL because he couldn't relate to his players is going to do a better job with the TikTok generation that's coming through? You think he's going to relate? Like, unless he has his girlfriend talking to all of them individually or working as a translator, there's no way that he's going to be able to relate to these kids better than what Summerall or a Campbell or a hotshot OC could do.
That is a prevailing question in my head. Can he get 100 kids plus to buy into what he's selling? But if he can, I actually do believe this could be a fit. He, like I just said, he wants another shot so bad. There's 130 plus FBS teams. There's only 32 NFL teams. So he sees where he could get more of a chance at coaching again. It's in college. Is North Carolina, though, willing to hand their program off to one old dude right after firing another one? Will, you bring up that point as well. It's a great question. I know that they're willing to kick the tires at least on it. And the current world of NIL and the way that college football exists now, Belichick might actually work well for a couple of years, just a couple of years. And at this point, what do the Tar Heels have to lose? All right, we got to switch gears. Is Oregon the most dominant team in college football? That's coming up next. Jordan Schultz and Will Ortner sitting in for the guys today on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan. Well, Danny has no voice. Dusty traveling to Indianapolis with the Oregon Ducks football team for the Big Ten Championship versus Penn State tomorrow in Indianapolis. Got to turn and burn here. Is Oregon the most dominant team in college football? Former ESPN College Game Day analyst David Polak, thinks so. Here's what he had to say on his podcast about the Ducks' success so far this season.
But Oregon has by far been the most dominant team this year. And it's interesting. We talk about parity in college football, and we do have parity, but Oregon doesn't have parity. Like, Oregon's had a great season. They've played one, you know, close game.
Let's talk about that game then.
Let's do it. They have 7 wins by 21 plus, Brent. Like, Oregon has thoroughly taken care of business.
Yeah, they really have, and that is something I don't think the national media is talking enough about. Well, we got to get to the next hour, so we'll go to break, but we're going to try to answer the question, is Oregon the most dominant team in college football, coming up next, as well as get into a preview of the Big Ten Championship game. Oregon favored by 3.5 over Penn State. I'm going to tell you why I think that number is way too low, and we'll dive into the rest of Oregon v. Penn State coming up on the other side of the break. Schultz and Will and Rusty in for Danny and Dusty on 1080 The Fan.